Two pages, please. Yeah. Okay, we're working with two pages today. They're both on the table in the back. If you only took one, avail yourself of the second, please. Please turn down your cell phones. Okay. Last week, on the page of Iyunim B'Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam Mo'adei Tishrei, we got a little bit of a tasting of one of the units of the Rambam, and when I say units, I'm referring to the division of the positive mitzvot and the division of the negative mitzvot as found in the Rambam's book of mitzvot, a division that was identified by Rabbi Professor Avi Feintuch of Ben-Gurion University fame, in which he shows that which the Rambam later on in life, in his Guide to the Perplexed, the Moreh Nebuchim, in the third book, divides all of the mitzvot Torah into precisely 14 units, and the units have to do with rationale of the mitzvot, ta'ameh mitzvot. The Rambam apparently had this all in mind much earlier in life, because between the ages of 30 and 35, by that little break between the Mishnah commentary, which ends at age 30, and the beginning of the writing of the Mishneh Torah, the Yad Chazakah, at age 35, he's writing other things, and one of the most important was this Sefer Mitzvot, as he himself said, is a type of introduction or promo to the Mishneh Torah. It allows him to have on the table some raw material, halachic raw material, so that his formulations of the mitzvot should be in order. I'll just make a comment now, methodologically, that not all of the sequential order of the mitzvot, as found in Sefer Mitzvot, is reflected in his later Mishneh Torah. Rambam had other reasons sometimes for his classification. And classification and order is an essential ingredient in the Mishneh Torah. I'll give you one example that's already on the page, and you'll see what I'm talking about. In the listing of the mitzvot asei, so it's just thumb down to Kuf Samach Aleph. It's right in the middle. Right, it starts with Kuf Nun Gimel, the Kadesh Chodashim, which Kiddush Chodesh. In the middle, it's Kuf Samach Aleph. Kuf Samach Kuf Nun Tet is to cessation of work, not to do work on the first day of Pesach. Lishbot b'rishon shel Pesach shenemar v'yom rishon mikra kodesh, and Kuf Samach is lishbot b'shvi'i bo shenemar v'yom shvi'i mikra kodesh. And the Rambam lists not doing melacha on each Yom Tov as an independent mitzvah, which means if there are 7 days in the Torah that we're not of Yom Tov that we don't do melacha, and the word melacha is not to be equated with not doing melacha with Shabbat. There's differences, as you all know. So does the first day Pesach, the second day Pesach, forget about Yom Tov Sheni, because in the Torah there's no Yom Tov Sheni. There's one day of Shavuot, there's one day of Rosh Hashanah, there's one day of Yom Kippur, that's anyway, and there's one day of Sukkot, and there's one day of Shmini Atzeret. So it's 7 days. So Rambam uses up 7 spaces in the listing of 613 for almost the same, what do you mean almost? Except for Yom Kippur, 6 of the 7 are the same. Exact same thing. What you're not allowed to do on Shavuot, you're not allowed to do on Rosh Hashanah, you're not allowed to do on Shmini Atzeret. So it's the same mitzvah. Now, what's the mitzvah secession from not doing melacha. That seems to be a don't. And the Rambam has it in the don'ts also. Lo ta'aseh melacha. Mikra Kodesh, lo ta'aseh melacha. But the Rambam believes that by not doing melacha, you've created an atmosphere of shvita, of resting. And although resting is not something that you fulfill by picking a finger up and doing something, what we call bikum va'aseh, nevertheless, it's a passive, positive mitzvah. And there are examples like that, as the Rambam illustrates with regard to fasting in Yom Kippur. So indeed, there's a avera, there's a lota asay in breaking the fast on Yom Kippur, but if you fast the day of Yom Kippur, you fulfill a positive mitzvah, v'initem et nafshotechem. You've created a feeling of inui, of affliction, which is exactly what you're supposed to feel on Yom Kippur. So I will say parenthetically that at the pharmacy, you can pick up a bunch of pills called Tzom Kal, which means have an easy fast. And I got news for you, that's not such a simple thing that anybody can take Tzom Kal. I had a druggist in the neighborhood in Ramot, and I gave her instructions, you only sell it to people who, if they wouldn't take the Tzom Kal, which is a water retention pill, basically, so it allows you, you have a less chance of dehydrating, which is really the issue of fasting in Yom Kippur. You dehydrate, you get dizzy, you get tired, you faint, and all these things. So if you take a Tzom Kal pill, it's going to hold the water in for a longer time, so you'll be able to feel a little bit more refreshed as you get through the day. So you have people who have a bad, you know, record in fasting. So fine, they don't want to break the fast. So take a Tzom Kal before Yom Kippur, and perhaps a pregnant woman or a nursing woman who's going to have some difficulty getting through the fast and wants the fast without any hanachot discounts. So you can take a Tzom Kal, but a perfectly healthy individual who, you know, doesn't feel great after Yom Kippur. Nobody feels great after Yom Kippur, fine, or Tisha B'Av for that matter. So the Papa Tzom Kal pill is really defeating the purpose of V'initem et nafshotechem. So again, I'm not here paschaling for you. You know, if you have an issue, you can talk to your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi.
And your doctor, because for some people...
Right, right, for sure. Yom Kippur, there's no question if there's an issue, you deal with your physician as well. But the rabbi should be in consultation with the physician and give you a psak on to handle it. Right. So I'm just saying Tzom Kal, because there's a machloket, there's a dispute, how to understand the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. You know, there's a special mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. You know, I don't have a lot of chumras in my life, but that's one of them. I like that chumra. Eating on Erev Yom Kippur. So the question is, why is there a mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur? So some say, so, you know, you're like a camel. You pack it in a little more so that you get through the fast. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who said, V'initem et nafshotechem, it really has rachmanas on you, and you know, you should go easy. It'll go easier if you have some storage reserved because you, you know, overate on Erev Yom Kippur. But there are others that say just the opposite, and the just the opposite is actually backed up by scientific information. If you overstuff yourself on Erev Yom Kippur, you're going to have a much more difficult fast. Not an easier fast. Any doctor will tell, any nutritionist will tell you that if you're looking for a Tzom Kal, if you're really looking for a Tzom Kal, a week before Yom Kippur, start eating less and less so that when you get into Yom Kippur, your blood level, your sugar levels in the blood are already lower and the expectation is less for the body, so the hunger pangs kick in later and less, you know, demonstratively. So the idea is that if you eat more on Yom Kippur, you're going to feel on Erev Yom Kippur rather, you're going to feel the Yom Kippur fast that much more, and that's exactly what was intended. So that you make sure that you feel the inui, you feel the pain, the affliction, the hunger. So overeat on Erev Yom Kippur so that you're going to feel it, you know, the kamosha tzarech. So you see that second opinion, it really takes away the wishings, the greetings that we tell people at Erev Yom Kippur. Shelecha Tzom Kal. What do you mean Tzom Kal? It's supposed to have Tzom Kaved, you know, it's just the opposite. So there are two takes on it, on the Tzom Kal. But the Rambam says that if you go through the day without eating or drinking and the other forms of pleasures, you have fulfilled a positive mitzvah of v'initem et nafshotechem. So you have some examples of positive mitzvot that really you fulfill by not doing, by sitting and doing nothing about it. And similar to Shemitah, By not working the land in the seventh year, you have a positive mitzvah, v'shavta aretz shabbat Hashem, that the land came to a halt, and that's the positive side. Shabbat. V'yom ha-shvi'i tishbot. So you don't work on Shabbat. Of course, working on Shabbat is a violation of a lo taseh. It's a violation. Lo taseh kol melacha. It says it over and over in Torah. But by not working, you've created a positive sensation of Shvitah. V'yom ha-shvi'i tishbot. V'yom ha-shvi'i tishbot. And that's positive. And that's why the Rambam includes that here in the mitzvot taseh, you have also Shabbat and other things about the other Chagim, including not doing melacha on the first day Pesach, last day Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, first day Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret. These are seven positive mitzvot. And the question is, why does the Rambam gobble up so much space for the same thing? And the answer is, the first day Sukkot is not the last day Sukkot. And the first day Pesach is not the last day Pesach. They are two different mitzvot. The fact that they are expressed in an almost identical, if not identical way, doesn't mean that it's the same mitzvah. Pesach has its own Kedushat Yom, sanctity of the day. And by having its own sanctity of the day, it carries with it its own mitzvot and should not be confused with another day of Yom Tov. And that's why if all the Yomim Tovim would be one package deal of sanctity of days, except it's spread out from Nisan to Tishrei, then in all likelihood we'd make one Shechianu for Kiddush for the night of the Seder, and would cover us for Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah and for Sukkot, so Shmini Atzeret, but we don't do that. We make individual Shechianu by Kiddush and by candle lighting for all of the Chagim, individually, except for Shvi Shel Pesach, where there's no Shechianu by candle lighting, or Kiddush, and that's because on a certain level the kedusha of the seventh day of Pesach is not defined really as an individual day. But nevertheless, the Rambam has each day of Yom Tov as an individual category of kedushat Yom. Now, in this listing in Kuf Samach Aleph of the Mitzvot Aseh, he says Lispor Miktzira to Omer Tishav Arba'im Yom Shneimar Usvartem Lachem. He lists the positive mitzvah of counting the Omer. Nothing strange about that, because that's certainly a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah, between Pesach and Shavuot. What about the mitzvah of cutting the Omer, harvesting the Omer, what's called Ktzirat Omer? That's also a mitzvah. So why does the Rambam talk about it here? Because he's not talking about the Beit HaMikdash activities here. In the unit that he deals with Beit HaMikdash activity, he will talk about the cutting of the Omer, the barley, that was then brought in Beit HaMikdash as Korban HaOmer. Here he's talking about counting the Omer. Counting the Omer. And why does he talk about it here? Because if you look at the scheme of how things develop, if you just take the first one, Kuf Nun Gimel, out of the picture, which is Kiddush HaChodesh, that's in Sefer Shmot. That's in Parshat Bo. HaChodesh Hazel Lachem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lachem Duchotshei HaShanah. That's the intro. That without Kiddush HaChodesh, you don't have any Chagim. But then the Rambam already jumps to Parshat Emor, Vayikra Kav Gimel, which we nicknamed Parshat HaMoadot. This is the Parsha of the Chagim. Strangely enough, after the initial headline, Eile Moadei Hashem Mikra'e Kodesh Asher Tikru'u Otam B'Moadam, here are the days of Mikra'e Kodesh that are sanctified. It doesn't begin with Pesach. It's Shabbat. And since when is Shabbat the Moed? Shabbat is not a Yom Tov. Shabbat has its own characteristic. And Shabbat has already been brought to our attention time and again before Vayikra Kav Gimel. I mean, forget about Breishit Perek Bet. It's there, but there you don't see it as a mitzvah. But you already smell the mitzvah in Parshat B'Shalach with regard to going out to get the man. Certainly, in Aseret HaDibrot, in Parshat Yitro, Zachot Yom HaShabbat Tekacho, and then in Parshat Mishpatim, of Yom HaShvi Tishpot, it's there, and then again in Parshat Kitisa, you have Shamu v'nei Yisrael at the Shabbat, Lasot the Shabbat Dorotam Brit Olam, and then in Vayaker, Sheshet Yemim Yaseh Melacha, and then it says, Lo Tvaru Esh Bechom Ushvotecham Yom HaShabbat. I mean, it's there throughout Sefer Shmot. So now we get the Parshat Emor, which is the tail end of Vayikra. All of a sudden you hear a few lines about Shabbat, which seems to be repetitive. I mean, we know that. We know when Shabbat is. We know there's no Melacha. And we don't understand why it's smack in the middle of the listing of the Yom Tov. I'm going to come back to this question. But it's there. That's why the Rambam puts it here, because he's got that perek in his mind. But then in Kufnun Hey, if he already mentioned Shabbat, here's the place to talk about Kiddush. Even though Kiddush is not here in Parshat Emor, it's back in the Aseret HaDibrot in Parshat Yitro. But it's there parenthetically because he's talking about Shabbat. But then he gets into the mitzvot that are there in Vayikra Kaf Gimel, Parshat Emor. Lefa'er Chameitz, to clean out the house of Chameitz, Lesaper B'tziat Mitzrayim. True enough, these mitzvot are Pesach mitzvot that are found in Sefer Shemot as well. But the subject of Pesach is the next on the agenda. And that's why he brings it all here. Lechol matzah b'leil zeh, lishpot b'rishon shel Pesach, not to do melacha on the first day of Pesach, which is Kuf Nun Tet, and then Kuf Samach, lishpot b'shvi'i bo, on the seventh day of Pesach, and you have all these mitzvot of Pesach. And then you have, lispor miktzirat ha'omer, tish'a v'arbim yom, sh'nemar, u'svartem lachem, svirat ha'omer. Because the next thing on the agenda is going to be Kuf Samach Bet, Lishbot b'yom chamishim, not to do melacha, 50 days after you counted the Omer. Because the Yom Tov of Shavuot does not have a date. It's defined by the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer. So 50 days after the counting of the Omer, then you have the next Yom Tov, which also is Ukratem b'yetzom yom hazeh mikra kodesh. And then afterwards he has Rosh Hashanah already, because that's the way the calendar works, right? It's Pesach, Sfirat HaOmer, Shavuot, then Rosh Hashanah, then Yom Kippur, and then the Sukkot. So with regard to Sfirat HaOmer, in the Sefer HaMitzvot, clearly the Rambam has the model of Vayikra Kaf Gimel, Parshat Emor, in mind. Yet when you open up the Mishneh Torah, if you're looking and looking and looking, where does the Rambam talk about Sfirat Omer? You're going to have to go to the laws of Beit HaMikdash to find it. It's in Hilchot Tmidin Umusafin, Perek Zayin. And there the Rambam, after talking about the harvesting of the Omer grains and brought as a korban, there the Rambam says, mitzvah taseh, lispo, there's the positive mitzvah, to count the 7 weeks from the day of the bringing of the Omer until the day of the bringing of the two breads, the Shtei Alechem, and it's not in the context of the Moadei Yisrael, but it's in the context of Beit HaMikdash. Because what the Rambam is doing there is connecting the counting of the Omer with the Korban HaOmer. And here, he's got something else in mind. He's got the calendar as it's played out in Vayikra Kaf Gimel. That's why it's out of sync. Which the Rambam, you have to understand, what are his ground rules in each of the Sfarim? He's not contradicting himself. It just adds. It's what's called l'hashlim. It adds another nuance to the mitzvah. Similarly, Birkat Kohanim, we call in Yiddish Duchening. So in Mishneh Torah, the Rambam counts it or discusses it as a tail end, as a type of maftir to Hilchot Tfilah. When do we have Duchening? It's part of Shemona Chazarat Hashat. So that's where this Duchening is. Not just Duchening, a Kohen walks into the room and gives everybody a bracha. That's not Birkat Kohanim. He doesn't make a bracha. I know that there's some minagim at a brit, at a chat, a chatunah. Besides, there's nothing wrong with a Kohen, saying Givarechicha and so on. But you never see him make a bracha. Asher Kidshanu, B'Kdushato Shel Aaron, B'Tzivanu, Levarech Et Amo Yisrael B'Ahava, and he gives the Chatan B'Kala a bracha. That I've never, ever seen. The bracha, which is the formal mitzvah, Birkat Kohanim, is in the context of Tfilah. Yet the Rambam makes casual mention of it in the Beit HaMikdash daily activity, because there was Birkat Kohanim over there too. But he talks about the Beit HaMikdash side of Birkat Kohanim in the laws of Tfilah, because that's really where it belongs. It's Avodat Hashem. Avodat Hashem, service of God, branches out to Tfilah and to Beit HaMikdash activity. So he talks about all the halachot of Birkat Kohanim in one location, and he selects Tfilah as being the location. Because Birkat Kohanim, from the Rambam's point of view, is a daily mitzvah. He doesn't know from this business that it's only in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz Laretz. The Sfaradim have Birkat Kohanim universally every single morning. So it's part and parcel of our davening. That's what we do. We have Birkat Kohanim. Yet in the Sefer HaMitzvot, where is Birkat Kohanim mentioned? It's mentioned right before the opening ceremony of the Mishkan in Parshat Naso. Vayi biyom kalot ha-mishkan, and so vakim et ha-mishkan. Right before that is the psukim of Birkat Kohanim. And it's alluded to in Parshat Shmini at the Chanukat Mishkan, the dedication of the Mishkan, which there it says that Aaron HaKohen lifted up his hands, Vayvarchem, and gave them a bracha. So Rashi says on the spot, it's Yivarechecha, Ya'er, and Yisar. It's the brachot of Birkat Kohanim. Just, you don't know the text. Open up Bamidbar, you'll see the text. Because there's like a flashback to Parshat Shmini. So the Rambam opts to discuss Birkat Kohanim and Sefer Mitzvot, not after he talks about the laws of Tefillah, but rather when he talks about the laws of Beit HaMikdash. Because that's where it's found in the Chumash. Which means that Sefer Mitzvot, the Rambam has the sequential order of the Chumash on the table. That's really guiding him. And that which is found in the Chumash in a particular order, that's how he's going to put it together in his Sefer Mitzvot. Whereas in the Mishnah Torah, it's going to be more conceptual and sometimes even practical. Even though in the Torah, you know, this is there and this is there, but at least on a practical level, we're going to put those two together. So Rama puts Birkat Kohanim together with the halachot. And so too with Sfirat HaOmer. Sfirat HaOmer is here in Sefer Mitzvot because it's part of the calendar. It comes between Pesach and Shavuot and actually determines the Yom Tov of Shavuot after the 50th day. The 50th day of the Omer is Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh, is the Chag HaShavuot. Yet in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam talks about practicalities. When was Sfirat HaOmer? What's this all about? Well, it has to do with being connected to the harvesting of the Omer as a Beit Mikdash activity. So he writes about it in Hilchot Tmidin Musafin, Perek Shvi. So that's the way the Rambam does things. We have to always be on the lookout. Bakasha.
Just wanted to ask before. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah. About the naming all the Yom Tov.
Yeah.
Each one has a mitzvah. The Rambam does the same thing in his list.
I'll tell you the honest truth. I'm going to say I don't remember what the Ramban does on this one. Okay? But I know that there are other Monei Mitzvot who have raised the red flag and say, what do we need to, I don't want to use the word waste, but you know, use up all these Mitzvot. We can use one and then we have six others for other things. There's no question that there are some who do that. As to the Ramban, I do not recall. Matter of fact, I don't think, but I will triple check it. Whether Ramban has this as listed in any degree separately. Okay, I have to check. I don't have my Sefer Mitzvot here with the Ramban. Yeah.
In Kaf Samach Aleph, when you have to, it says about counting the 50
right.
days, 49 days.
Right.
Why is that there and not before? The seventh day of Pesach.
That's a good kasha. So in the sequential order, if the Rambam would really be a stickler for order, so when do we start counting the Sfira? Before the seventh day of Pesach. Seventh day of Pesach was already the seventh day of the Omer, the sixth day of the Omer. So the answer really is because he's already talking about the first day. He does this often. He's on the subject. Let's finish the subject of Pesach, and now we'll get on to Shavuot. Because Sfira to Omer is a Shavuot concern. It's not a Pesach concern. That he does often enough. It's almost similar to how do we know that this is even a legitimate concern to start looking at the order of the Rambam? Because the Rambam was asked about the mitzvah of Shmitat Karkaot, which is the mitzvah of not working the land in the seventh year, and it's listed as 134, Kuflam Dalet. That is also a mitzvah in the seventh year, cancellation of loans, Shmitat Ksafim. But that's seven mitzvahs down the road, Kuf Mem Aleph. So somebody asked him, why didn't you write it right together? So he gives an answer. He says, you know, I wanted to finish up all kinds of other things that were agricultural. When I finished the subject of the agricultural side of Shemitah, so I got around to the Shemitat Ksafim. But what you see from there, whether you like his answer or not, is totally irrelevant. I mean, it's the Rambam himself who gave the answer. But at least it indicates that he gave thought to the order. And that's really important. That's a very, very important source. It's like there was a listing of some 24 questions that were addressed to the Rambam from South France, Chachmei Lunil, the town of Lunil. And these Chachmei Lunil were actually students of the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, who wrote stinging critical comments on the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. Now the students had their Rebbe's criticism, but they also thought that, one second, the Rambam's the Rambam, and let's hear him out on it. We have communication. The Ravid died, he was an old man when the Mishnah Torah came out, and the Ravid thought why does this young upstart from Egypt, what does he know? And he doesn't comment on every halakha, but he's like, you know, like a book review of sorts. You know, this he writes Zehevel, this is Narishkeit, and that's what he writes on the Rambam. He writes this and that, this is wrong, no, can't be, and this contradicts something. And it's not a work. The Rav Sun, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, wrote a major article on this, the Ravid of Porsquare, programmatic essay. He shows that the Ravid's Hasagot on the Rambam is not to be judged as a serious work on the part of the Ravid. It's almost like evaluating Agnon, but all you have, you don't have any poem that he wrote, you don't have any book that he wrote, but you happen to have a few book reviews that he published somewhere in some newspaper. So on the basis of some book reviews that he writes in some newspaper, you're going to write about Agnon. I mean, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik said that Bidyuk, the same thing. How can you write about the Ravid just about on this Hasagot? But nevertheless, some of his students got together, and the representative's name was Rabbi Yonatan from Luniel, and in a very, very respectful manner, they pose 24 questions. All 24 appear in the Hasagot HaRaivin with stinging comments, but they don't write it like that. They write, Yorenu Rabbeinu, please teach us, Schacha Kaful Min HaShamayim, you know, you'll have double schar, and you know, we mortals, we don't understand anything, we're gunish, you know, we're ephesim, and you please open, illuminate us, open our eyes. It's, I mean, beautiful language, right? And the Rambam writes them back. And he writes, well, here you have a manuscript that's faulty. Here you don't understand this. He answers every single one. But what's lacking is tremendous, what's called lamdanut, insightful splitting of hairs that you might expect from the later achronim. So Rabbi Twersky, the Rav son-in-law, wrote the monumental book on introduction of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. He writes that the family tradition in the Soloveitchik home is that Rav Chaim, the Rav's grandfather, he didn't like the Rambam's answers. Like, he could have given better answers to these questions. The Rav Yonatan Luniel. I mean, just think about how the absurd this is, right? The Rambam responds to these 24 questions, and 750 years later, Rav Chaim said, I could have given better answers. They were a little disappointed. He was disappointed with the lack of intensity and depth of the answers. The answers were very superficial. So you have a faulty text, all right? Just patch it up and you'll see everything's okay. He didn't like this thing. He thought that, you know, you have to really start splitting hairs and saying the Rambam here meant this and over there he meant that and go prove it. That makes for a good shiur klali in the yeshiva, mishmedrash, and so on. But that doesn't mean that's what the Rambam had in mind. One of my great professors, Rav Meir Simcha Cohen Feldblum, used to tell us, the more bombastic chidush, novel idea, suggested to the Rambam, the less likelihood the Rambam had that in mind. Because if the Rambam really wanted to teach that very, very deep point, he would have said it. He wouldn't have waited 700 years for Rav Chaim to figure it out from some language issue in the text. But all right, that's heresy in the Brisk Yeshiva, what I just said now. So, okay, but this is not Brisk. We're in the OU Center. Get away with it. But if you take a look at the remaining list, so what Feige just said, the comment about Sfiras Haima, so let's go down the list now. So it says then, Kuf Samach Gimel is Lishpot Bereshon Shel Chodesh Hashvi, not to do work on the first day of the seventh month, which is Rosh Hashanah. And then Kuf Samach Dalet is Lit Anot Ba'asiri, to fast on the 10th day, which is Yom Kippur. And then there's Kuf Samach Hei, Lishpot B'Yom Tzom, Shenemar Shabbat Shabbaton Hu Lachem. Okay, so you have the fast now. You have Beseda. That's okay. That the Lishbot means not the fast. That means not to do Malacha on that day of the fasting. And then Kuf Samach Vav is not to do Malacha on the first day of Sukkot. And Kuf Samach Zayin is not to do Malacha on the seventh day, which is Shmina Tzeret. And then Kuf Samach Chet is Leishen Basukah Shivat Yamim Shenemar Basukot Teishvu Shivat Yamim. Now here you may argue again, as Feige pointed out, why didn't he write the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah right after he mentioned the mitzvah of not doing work on the first day of sukkah? He already mentions not doing work on Shmini Atzeret because he's on the subject of malacha, so he's just taking care of that subject for the whole chag, because you can't deny the fact that sukkot is from day 1 to day 8. Now I finished saying what I said about it, so I'm going to tell you that there are two mitzvot. One is sitting in the sukkah, And one is taking lulav d'arba minim lukachtem lachem b'yom rishon. Now here comes the problem. Kufayin l'shmoa kol shofar b'rosh hashanah shenemar yom t'raya lachem. What is that doing there? That's really out of place. That's really out of place. He should have said that earlier, after Kuf Samach Gimel, where he says Lishpot Parishon Shel Chodesh Hashvi'i Shenemar Be'echad LaChodesh Yalechem Shabbaton. So why does he do that? The last one is almost incidental. The Rambam had a problem, both in the Sefer Mitzvot as well as in the Mishnah Torah. Where exactly is he going to talk about the mitzvah of giving a half a shekel? Where is he going to talk about it? So you might say, it should most. I would have guessed if the Rambam would have asked me, and you know he didn't ask me because he put it somewhere else. So he asked somebody else or himself. If he would have asked me, I would have said before you start talking about the public korbanot, the korban tamid of the morning, korban tamid of the afternoon, the musafim, everything that has to do with corporate korbanot and Beit Hamikdash, the financing was from the collection of the half shekel pieces. It's clearly a Beit Hamikdash concern. So it should have been there. But the Rambam doesn't talk about Shkalim there. He talks about it in the context of the Chagim. This third book of the Mishnah Torah is called Zmanin, where he talks about Shabbat and Eruvin, and then he talks about Chametz Matzah, and he talks about the Natu Melacha Yom Kippur, Shvitat Asor, and he talks about Shofar Sukkah and Lulav, he has Chanukah and Megillah and Chanukah, and Kiddush HaChodesh, everything seems to be kosher v'yosha there. So all of a sudden, as they say in Yiddish, mitten drinnen, hilchot shkalim. Why is hilchot shkalim there? So he says, because it's also a seasonal mitzvah. It's true, it's a seasonal mitzvah. It's once a year. So, you know, Pesach comes once a year, Shavuot once a year, everything's once a year. This is once a year. But no way would we say that the mitzvah of giving shkalim is a chag. It's not a yom tov in any way or manner. But you see, the Rambam struggled a little bit where to put the shkalim, and here in the Sefer Mitzvot, he puts it also not where it would fit. If the Torah would have talked about shkalim in Parshat Emor, I would have. There's my answer. But he doesn't. Torah talks about it back in Sefer Shmot and Parshat Kittisa. We call Parshat Shkalim. Zeh yitnu kol avar pkudim machzita shekel b'shekel hakodesh. So why is it here in Kuf Ayin Aleph litain machzita shekel b'chol shana shenemar zeh yitnu kol avar? And the only thing I can suggest is that the Rambam really thought it out where it should be, and was probably decided by the fact that where is Masechet Shkalim found in the Mishnayot? If you have the six orders of Mishnah of Zraim, Moed, Nashim, is Nizikin, Kodashim, and Taharot, it's in Zmanim. It's there in the context of the Seder of Shabbat and Chagim. That's where Masechet Shkalim is. So it's almost like Rambam would be saying, you know, I don't know exactly know where I should classify this, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi decided to classify it in Zmanim, so it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. It's not a good answer, by the way. I must say, it's not a very convincing answer, if you haven't picked it up from my tone, because the Rambam digressed from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's classification often enough, and never really saw himself, as they say, mechuyav, obligated to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's classification. The only thing is that maybe it was a tiebreaker. Maybe he had considerations that it can go this way or that way. So the fact that Masechet Shkalim is found in the Mishnah in Seder in Moed, it gave him a little bit of a push to also include it in what the Sefer that he calls Zmanim, which is also Chagim, Moedim, and Zmanim, and so on. Maybe. But here at Sefer Mitzvot, it's in the same place. It's part of the Chagim. That we know. But let's get back to Kufayim. Why is Shofar out of place? So let's drop down to the second paragraph where it says Mitzvot Lo Taseh. So here too, it's the flip side. Lo Lasot Melacha B'Shabbat, Lo Lahalech Chutz L'Tchum Medina Kol Chei Drachim B'Shabbat. This is a flashback to Parshat B'Shalach, but it's Tchum Shabbat. Fine. So you have the Shabbat issues here. And then Shin Kav Bet is something that perhaps we never realized is an Avera. You don't have to worry about it because it's never going to affect any of us. It says Shelo Le'enosh B'Shabbat, that Shenemar Lo Tavaru Eish B'Chol Moshvotechem. We know that Lo Tavaru Eish B'Chol Moshvotechem, which means not to transfer fire on Shabbat. which according to some poskim is the issue of electricity, not on Shabbat, not all poskim, but according to some, many poskim, I would even say, we may have grown up by hearing that Shabbat, electricity on Shabbat, is an issue of closing a circuit, and that would somehow fall into the category of construction on Shabbat, boneh, because you're fixing, so you're closing something, fixing something, and making it happen. The one who thought that was the Chazon Ish, but he really was going against the grain of most of the poskim who dealt with the issue of chashmal on Shabbat in the late 19th century and early 20th century, and most of them saw it as an issue of transfer of fire. You're not allowed to also make a fire. You can't strike a match on Shabbos either, but if you have an existing flame, you're not allowed to transfer it to another. That's the difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov. Yom Tov, you're not allowed to strike a match either. That's why you have to have a candle burning on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, so that you'll have something there lit so you can light candles for the second night of Rosh Hashanah, which is not before 6:58, by the way. Okay? You have to have the first day of Rosh Hashanah finish before you light candles for the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Shul de'davening ma'ariv already. But that's okay. You light candles not before 6:58 on the second night of Rosh Hashanah. But it has to be from an existing fire. You can't strike a match. And if you don't have a match, forget about it. Look up to the light bulb. But the only problem is, look up to the light bulbs was a very, very important psak from Rav Chaim Oizer Gruzinski, the Rav from Vilna, because light bulbs in those days were burning filament. But light bulbs today, if they are fluorescent, they're not ash. It's gas, by the way. And if it's a LED bulb, LED, then there's no heating element at all, which led Rav Nochum Rabinowitz, the great Rosh Hashiva of Malé Adamim, to suggest, ready for this one? Everybody have their seatbelts on? Nobody falling off now. That there's no Isser Shabbos putting on a lead bulb on Shabbat. No, because it's cold electricity, he said. Now, he didn't say you should do it. Don't call me now. No. He didn't say it's a mitzvah to put the lights on. He didn't say that. But under certain circumstances, where there's what's called a sha'at hadchak, you can at least take refuge and consoled by, if you do something, that a little green light goes on in the refrigerator when you open the door, you didn't do anything wrong. That's the honest truth. And this kicked into his whole landmark psak about using magnetic cards at hotels and they open up the doors, because people say, but there's a green light that flashes or a red light flashes if it's no good. Rabbi Binowitz says there's no Ma'aseh Shabbos. I don't have one conventional bulb in my new apartment. I moved in last November. Not one conventional bulb, not one fluorescent, not one conventional bulb. Every single bulb in my house is lit. And which means that if there's a shat atchak, I would be able to be matir putting it on, maybe with a shinui. Rabbi Rabinowitz said, why shinui? Because people don't know that it's really mutter, so people think it's asur, so you have to do it in a somewhat roundabout way, because of marit ayin, what people might think, and so on. But certainly not to make it regular. Not a lot of people rejected Rabbi Rabinowitz, not because they thought he was wrong, but they thought that Shabbat is going to collapse. They thought that when the Rabbanim took a stand 100 years ago that chashmal is prohibited on Shabbat, they really saved Shabbat. Because the truth is, without chashmal and with chashmal, it's a world of a difference of what your Shabbat's going to look like. A world of a difference. But we should know. So, Havarat Eish is a Yom Tov, and Yom Tov is permissible. Perfectly permissible. But you're not allowed to strike a match on Yom Tov. But on Shabbat, it's asur. But here, the Rambam tells us, based on Chazal, based on the Medrash, that that Beit Din would not execute by Sreifa on Shabbat. If somebody was convicted of an Aveira, that the mode of execution was Sreifa, and Sreifa wasn't the way they do it in India by putting you on logs and then burning you up, but actually by pouring hot molten lead into, so it was an internal burning. The body did not change. The body was not burnt up. But his kishkas got burnt up, and that's how he died. The okay, so don't do those averas, you know. That's it. So one second. So it says that lo tvarosh b'chomos shvatechem. You can't do that on Shabbat, and if you can't do that on Shabbat, you can't hang the guy on Shabbat either. Yeah, b'chaim.
You said at the end of the last lesson that you would deal with why we keep 2 days.
Oh, 2 days Rosh Hashanah. Okay, fine. Okay. What? The question was that I made a comment last week that I'll talk about why we do 2 days Rosh Hashanah, where it's not really the same as 2 days Yom Tov. You know, here we do in Eretz Yisrael, including Yerushalayim, 2 days Rosh Hashanah. So I'll just say in a moment that there is a concept called Yom Ha'arichta. It's a long, elongated 24 hours. 48 hours. 48 hours of one day. One day is 24 hours, but here it's 48 hours. It's 2 days, which is really one day, which is very different than 2 days Yom Tov and Chutz La'aretz, which is two different days. It's 24 and 24. There are many, many ramifications to viewing Rosh Hashanah. Why would it be a second day at all? Well, the truth is, the reason that there's a second day is very similar why they're 2 days Yom Tov. But with regard to 2 days Yom Tov, it's because they couldn't communicate the idea when was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. They needed more than 2 weeks to get that information out to Bavel. So while the communities in Eretz Yisrael received messages through all kinds of couriers that on a certain day, on a Tuesday, they made it Rosh Chodesh Nisan, everybody can count 2 weeks to the 15th and they know when Pesach is. But that information did not get to Bavel till after the 15th, so they had no other choice but they had to keep 2 days Yom Tov. With regard to Rosh Hashanah, it happens to be Rosh Chodesh. How in the world are they going to let people in the Galil know when they made Rosh Chodesh? They're going to do the act of Rosh Chodesh here in Yerushalayim. And there's no way to communicate it. Not only that, but the feeling was that the Edim, the witnesses, might even come in the afternoon of Rosh Hashanah, of Aleph. So let's assume they do come, or they don't come, then tomorrow is Aleph. So what's today? They had no choice but to institute 2 days Rosh Hashanah for everybody because of the inability to really communicate. Now, Mir Tashem, this is going to change when we go back to the system of Kiddush HaChodesh Al Pi Re'iyah, the visual sighting of the moon. Why will it change? It will change because the issues were communication. And today we have global instant communication. And if you say, well, if it's Yom Tov, how can you communicate? So that which is a Darabanan Beit Din did anyway. There was no Gzeirot Midarabana, no rabbinic restrictions in the context of Beit Din. So they were able to get the message out. And then, of course, that's why we have Machon Tzomet and other things to allow you to get things done under Bishat Adchak in an emergency, and certainly to get the information out that there was Rosh Chodesh, that's considered Shat Adchak. So every Gabbai in Shul is going to know on Shabbos morning if that day was Rosh Chodesh or not, or if it's Rosh Hashanah or not. So we're going to have absolute information, and we have the ability today to convey that information. But be it as it may, that Chazal instituted 2 days Rosh Hashanah, they did it in a way that's somewhat different than the standard Yom Tov Sheni for Chutz Laretz, in that they viewed the 2 days Rosh Hashanah as one elongated day. And that really makes a problem. It makes a problem for the Kiddush Friday night and the Shechiyonu Friday, not Friday night, the second night of Yom Tov, and the Kiddush lighting candles second night of Yom Tov, because if it's the same day, why are you going through the lighting candles, and why are you going through? So the truth of the matter is, that is the reason why we have a minhag of putting a new fruit on the table on the second night of Rosh Hashanah, or wearing a new garment on the second night of Rosh Hashanah. So we'll piggyback on the Shechiyonu, on the garment, on the fruit, and have in mind the Yom Tov, just in case. It's one of these just in case jobs. And so indeed, there is this issue. And the question is, and that's why Chazal were comfortable, by the way, doing away, dispensing with Tkiyat Shofar on Shabbat. The mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah is Shofar. And when Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbat, we don't blow Shofar. That means we go through the Yom Tov, you know, just with apple and honey. But apple and honey is not in the Chumash, you know. It's the main mitzvah of the day is not there. So what's left? So you blow tomorrow on Sunday. But if you see the second day Yom Tov as an integral part of the first day Yom Tov, we've actually salvaged the mitzvah. And so it's that's why we do it. That's why we're comfortable in not blowing shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Yeah.
The year starts. I thought the year starts with Nisan, the first month.
Okay.
So how come they don't start with Rosh Chodesh Nisan and make Pesach 2 days because it's not the first of the month?
Right, because not the beginning of the month. Rosh Hashanah happens to also be Rosh Chodesh, and it's given token mentioning in Musaf, Milvad Olata Chodesh U Minchata, Volata Tamid U Minchata. It's just casual. It's glossed over very quietly. By the way, it's also Rosh Chodesh, so they had to bring the Rosh Chodesh Musaf on Rosh Hashanah also. But it says Bakesel Yom Chagenu. Rosh Hashanah is a day that where it's covered up. The Rosh Chodesh factor is somewhat hidden. Tiku b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chagenu. It's covered up. It's kisui. And what's really rises is the Rosh Hashanah factor. And the Rosh Chodesh factor is like, you know, it's a little bit quiet. So if you just look at the mitzvot lo ta'aseh. So it says lo le'enosh b'shabbat, which means capital punishment is never meted out on Shabbat. And then I go further. Lo lasot melacha, first day of Pesach. Lo lasot melacha, the seventh day of Pesach. Lo lasot melacha, Chag HaShavuot. Lo lasot melacha, the first of Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah. Lo lasot melacha, Barishon Shel Chag, first of Sukkot. Lo lasot melacha, B'yom Shmini, which is Shmini Atzeret. And what's the next one? Shalola Shin Kaftet, which is on the line. Shalola lasot melacha, B'yom Kippurim. 1 second. Something's out of order. Why do we put the Yom Kippur before Sukkot? If we're talking about the order. So it's Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. And it's Shin Kaf Tet. The way the printer gave this to me, the Shin Kaf Tet was actually printed after Shin Kaf Vav with the right number, Shin Kaf Tet. And then it said Shin Kaf Zayin and Shin Kaf Chet. I mean, some printer thought he was going to help out the Rambam here and inserted the Issa Malach of Yom Kippur between Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, where it naturally should belong, but didn't dare change the number system. So I caught it in my eye, and I said, 1 second, it's wrong. So I switched it. You know, with the computer, you can do these things with word processing. So I put it in its proper place, and this is how Rav Kapach has it in his edition, in the Lo Ta'aseh of the Chagim. Shin, Kaf, Tet. Azarashu Zharnu Milasot Melacha B'Yom Kippurim. And that's after Shin, Kaf, Chet, which is Shmini Atzeret, which is after Shin, Kaf, Zayin, which is first day of Sukkot, which is after Shin, Kaf, Vav, which is Rosh Hashanah. So why did the Rambam do this? So Professor Feintuch suggests, and I think it's credible, that the Rambam took it out of its natural setting, because the Issa Malacha of Yom Kippur is different than Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, and Sukkot. With regard to Pesach, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, and Sukkot, there is a Masechet, it's called Masechet Beitza Nolda B'Yom Tov, which the Rambam calls Yom Tov, Masechet Yom Tov, and all of those Yechagim are bound by the same halachot of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do on Yomim Tovim, in terms of Malacha. Number one, you take the 39 melachot of Shabbat, and if your person violates any of those with warning up front, don't do this, it's a capital punishment offense, and there are two witnesses who see that you do it, and you said, I don't care, apa pichein. So the days that Beit Din functioned, you could be executed for something like that. The exact same melacha on Yom Tov, there's no execution. It's only Malkot, lashing. It's like eight chazer, like you cook basar b'chalav. It's only a lav, which means it's a much lower order of an avera. Let's say writing, just for example, right? Writing two letters is the definition of writing on Shabbat. You write one letter, it's only the rabbanan, because you might write a second letter. So writing the second letter is already the biblical violation. You're not allowed to write on Shabbat, you're not allowed to write on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to write on Yom Tov. If you write on Shabbat, it's a capital punishment with skila, stoning. If you write on Yom Tov, it's only lashing, it's only malkot. What's the deal with Yom Kippur? It says Shabbat Shabbaton, true. So what's the deal? If somebody writes on Yom Kippur, is it hotzah lahoreg? Is it like Shabbat? Or is it like malkot? The answer is it's neither. It's neither. It's not really stronger than Shabbat, even though it says Shabbat Shabbaton, it's not stronger than Shabbat. It is called karet. What is karet? Karet is machloket. You should have known that's the answer, right? Karet is a machloket, dispute. According to the Rambam, it means forfeiting one's olam haba. That's not a good thing to be in, to that kind of context. not he lives out his life, but then dies like a fly, like a mosquito, where there's nothing that happens after, no afterlife, no nothing. That's called karet. Others, I would even say many, many others, say that karet has something to do with untimely death before the age of 60. So much so that there is a gemara that says that one of the Amoraim observed a party, made a sudat mitzvah at his 60th birthday, because it shows that he never did an avera that he was obligated in karet. That he was... And you should know, in the great Hasidic centers, the Rebbes would always celebrate big time, the 60th birthday, because of this Gemara. But the Rambam doesn't know from that. The Rambam doesn't know from age, he doesn't know about untimely death. He talks about losing Olam Haba. 8th parak, 8th chapter of L'chol Tshuva. But whatever it is, it's serious. It's serious. It's more serious than Malkot, but halachically less serious than execution. Because in a karet scenario, you're left to live, and you can still do many, many mitzvot, and there's even a mechanism of kapara from karet. You can receive atonement from karet, but there's a catch to it. You can't do it today, believe it or not, because you have to have a beit din of 3 dayanim with the original smicha, and you have to get shmeist on the back also. But it has to go with full tshuva and so on. Now, what I just said now is a piece of history of the 16th century in Tzfat. Because there were the halacha is that if a Jew is under duress, asked to perform one of the three mitzvot, including idolatry, avodah zarah, he's supposed to die and give up his life. And it's the mitzvah of martyrdom. In the Spanish Inquisition, so the people were tortured, and they said, all right, they'll go through baptism. So the Rambam says, that's a chil Hashem, but it's under duress, because people want to live. You can't really hold the person accountable. But, nevertheless, a person who had the opportunity of Kiddush Hashem on that level, and did not take the opportunity, but rather chose to live, so it's a onish karet. And the only way to get off that onish karet is by this procedure of a beit din. Many of these people eventually made it to Tzfat. Many is an exaggeration. Like Rav Yosef Karo himself makes it to Tzfat, but I never said that he baptized. But some did, and made it to Tzfat. And they were knocking on the doors of the Chachmei Tzfat to get Malkot because they did tshuva. And they felt really bad. There was real remorse there. Real charata. And that's why Rav Yosef Karo and Rabbi Yaakov Beirav and Rav Moshe Alshich, they rejuvenated the smicha. This is a very important history of halacha. The rejuvenation of the smicha based on a cryptic line in the Rambam that opened the possibility of doing something like that. It's not that Rabbi Yosef Karo wanted a diploma on his wall so he can show his mother and she should have nachas from him. That wasn't what it was. It was so they could convene a beit din with the authority to give malkot. There was a much to do about that beit din, and there were no small number here in Eretz Yisrael who were against it, and it fizzled out ultimately. The next opportunity to do something like that was 1948. With the establishment of the state, Rav Maimon, the first minister of religion of the state of Israel, also tried to rejuvenate the smicha in order to create a Sanhedrin here. It didn't work. But this is karet. So Yom Kippur is an isur karet. And it's interesting that those few averot that the Torah slaps on this tag, karet, so if you look at the Jewish people 13 million strong today, plus minus, as they say. You know, the question is, who's a Jew when you start counting? But all right, there are approximately 30 million Jews, about 6 million here, 7 million in the Gola. And not all the Jews, as you know, are Torah observant. Yet, there are no small number of Jews who some mitzvot, for good traditional reasons, still hang on to. Like making a brit on the child, even fasting in Yom Kippur, and having not eating chametz on Pesach. These things, a lot of people who are not fundamentally religious, but see themselves in some traditional light, will observe. Which mitzvot do they observe? Those mitzvot that the Torah happened to have slapped a karet on it. Now, not that because they became scholars, Torah scholars, and they made the distinction, all right, to eat chazer, that's okay, because that's only a lav, it's only malkot, that I'll go for. But chametz on Pesach, it's a karet, so that I want. No, nothing to do with that. There's something about the psyche of the Jewish experience that has embedded into the minds and hearts of Jews throughout the ages. This you don't do. This you don't do. You fast on Yom Kippur. Now, unfortunately, there's some Jews out there who don't fast Yom Kippur. Here in Eretz Yisrael, we have good statistics, by the way, where 83% of the country won't eat chametz on Pesach. Now, Dati'im, Shomrei Torah Mitzvot here in this country is 20%. But up to 65%, two-thirds of the country, see themselves as very traditional. 83% won't eat chametz on Pesach. And 91% will fast on Yom Kippur. And 96% will make sure their kid has a brit. It's unbelievable. You cannot compare that to, let's say, American Jewry or British Jewry. It doesn't even come close. It doesn't even come close. I remember several years ago on TV, on Channel... Remember there used to be a thing called Channel 1, and that was it? Remember? Before cable hit the country? It wasn't called Channel 1. It was Televisia Yisraelit. That's all it was, right? You don't say Channel 1 when there's only Channel 1. Except for the light rail. Light rail is line 1, L1. In case you never know what L1 means. Because there's a dream that there's going to be L2 one day, and L3, and L4, and L5. You know? Our grandchildren, it's a shame. But what did I just say?
The percentages?
Yeah. You take, for example, Chutz La'aretz, so the United States, the largest Jewish community outside of Israel, some say 4.2 million, some say 5 million, whatever it is, no more than 10% of the Jewish community in America are Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. Here it's twice as much in terms of Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. But you don't have 65% even close who are traditional. So I saw on an interview many years ago on the news, on the television Yisraelit, so they did the night before Yom Kippur, they did the two human interest shows of preparing for Yom Kippur. So one scene was in Me'er Shearim for Kaparot, right? It makes for good television. Makes for very good television, Kaparot. And the other, the TV moved to North Tel Aviv. Now, North Tel Aviv, as you know, is a bastion of non-religious existence. I mean, there are Dati'im there, but that's not what it's known for. That's what Tel Aviv Tzafon. They're Jews, and we have to love them. So they interview a high school kids, at a bike store. You know that Yom Kippur is a Yom Tov for cyclists, because nobody's on the roads. The whole country shuts down. The airport shuts down. Once a year, the Ben Gurion Airport is shut down. And Yom Kippur. Nobody's on the roads except for emergency vehicles, police and ambulances. So the main roads become for skateboards and bicycles and whatnot. So this guy, these kids, they're fixing up their equipment. And the guy interviews them. How are you preparing for Yom Kippur? You know, you got this and you bought that and bought that. At the end of the interview, he says, and you'll be fasting tomorrow? He says, Betach Yom Kippur. Like, what kind of idiotic question was that? It's Yom Kippur, right? Everybody fasts in Yom Kippur. So he had no problems. You know whose fault this is? It's our fault that we didn't do enough, that kid is not coming to shul on Yom Kippur. It's our fault. We didn't do enough. That's all. That the kid from Tzon Tel Aviv, who's fasting in Yom Kippur, thinks he's going to go on Fish Mishpash Time over there on the Tel Aviv route and is going to be upset.
There's an area.
But
there's an Erev
there, right? Right. You remind me of the story of the two gentlemen who were learning. Balabatim, they had a Seder every night. 30 years they're learning together, and just then after 30 years, just in the middle of conversation, the guy blurts out something that he's really not Jewish. What do you mean you're not Jewish? We're learning together, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos for 30 years. Tell me you're not Jewish, and you're a Shomer Shabbos. He says, no, I'm not a Shomer Shabbos. Every Shabbos I put a bobby pin in my pocket. So he says, well, that doesn't help. There's an Erev here. She says, I don't hold from the Erev. Yeah, like a Shabbos.
Maybe I missed this. What is the Rambam's source for saying that Karev relates to
Yolam Habah? It's the 8th chapter of Ilchot Tshuva. Okay? So, the reason I brought this to attention to show that Yom Kippur is out of context, because it's a different level of Issa Malacha. Number one, it carries all the stringencies of Shabbat. There's no discounts on what's called Ochel Nefesh. So for Yom Tov, regular Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook, and you're allowed to do other things for food preparation. And the Gemara tells us, Mitok Shutra Lochel Nefesh, Shutra Nami Loch Shalo Lochel Nefesh. So once the Pandora's box was opened, so now we have leniencies for other things. That's why you're allowed to carry on Yom Tov. You don't have to, not just food. Food, okay, that's ochel nefesh. But you're allowed to carry your keys. You remember in America, all of a sudden, you can carry your keys and carry a handkerchief and carry a maxer and take the baby carriages out. And it was all kinds of different experience on Yom Tov. Well, what does that have to do with food? The answer is, hidra hudra shelo letzorach. Even if it's not tzorach ochel nefesh, you're allowed to do it on Yom Tov. But Yom Kippur, no. Yom Kippur, no. There is a fine distinction between Shabbat and Yom Kippur. And that has to do with salad preparation before the end of the fast. Knivat hayerek. Which means, you know, when you prepare a salad, so you're going to have to scrape off some of the cucumbers, and sometimes people the peels, and they slice it up. Whatever. The feeling is that people are going to be so hungry. So of course, what do they eat after the fast? Salads, right?
No.
But in the days of Chazal, that's what they ate. So there was a heter shortly before Yom Kippur came to an end, that even though this is really hachana, I mean, what are you doing? You're preparing the salads on Yom Kippur, the eating after Yom Kippur, but you know, the Balei Halacha thought that this would be a moment of grace for Am Yisrael, that they can sit down and then have to wait till the wife cuts up the salad. Maybe the husband cuts up the salad. Somebody's got to cut up the salad. So you're allowed to cut it up. But there's a machloket on this, and the Rabbah passes the chumra. You can't do it on any Yom Kippur, whether it's a weekday Yom Kippur or Shabbos Yom Kippur. But on that little note, there's a fine difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur. But the main difference is the onesh. There's no execution for no penalty of execution for violating Yom Kippur. So it's different. So that's why the Rambam puts the Issa Malach of Yom Kippur out of the context of the other Chagim. He deliberately leaves it for the end. So now the question is, how come the Rambam took Shofar and put it at the place that he put it? So this is going to wait till next week now. And then I'm going to refer to the second page. So just put the second page back on the table. And we're going to see next week what the Rambam thought about the mitzvah of Shofar, and what Rabbi Sadia Gaon thought about the mitzvah of Shofar. The Rambam has one idea, and Rabbi Sadia Gaon has 9 other ideas about why we blow Shofar. Alright? So that's going to carry us for next week. So please put both pages. If you do me a favor, put them on different piles so that I don't have to cold labor.